This week on the BOAG World Web Show, we're joined by Andrew Yates from Buffer to talk about creating a great user experience on mobile devices. This episode of the BOAG World Show is supported by Media Temple, Fleep, and Marcus's Joke Emporium. Dear listener, and welcome to BOAGworld.com, the podcast for those involved in designing, developing, and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul BOAG. Joining me as always is Marcus. And
hello.
No, you don't get to speak yet, Marcus. We need to get slicker at this, working out when you get to say things.
We are onto the second decade now of doing this, so we should be a little slicker, but we're not.
The second decade. Don't say it like that. That's terrible. Anyway, what I was going to say is we're being joined today by Andy Yates from Buffer. Hello, Andy.
Hey there.
Oh, that sounded exciting. I'm feeling... now,
it's 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. It's not that Andy isn't excited about being on the show. It's simply that it's very, very early for you.
Yep.
And you've just moved into a new office.
Yeah, so you spent most of the week moving out of our existing office that's been slowly getting emptier over the last few months.
It did amuse me. I was watching your time-lapse video on Twitter of you just sitting there and things disappearing around you.
Yep. So you sat on the floor for a little bit because somebody took the last seat. So, yeah, good fun. Still doing some work, though, sat on the floor.
So what's your new office like? Is it nice?
Yeah, so it's just a co-working space, and it serves my favourite coffee in the city, so can't complain at that. Although it wasn't quite open for this, so I had to head to Starbucks to get my caffeine fix.
No, oh, so, yeah. See, that's because it's just too early.
Yeah.
Well, so Andy, I mean, you and Buffer itself started off over here, didn't you, in Blighty? And at some point, you decided to defect to San Francisco. What was all that about? When did that happen?
Yeah, so... I was working at a web agency, 2011, and basically knew Joel by going to a coffee shop most weekends, working on side projects, and then he shifted over from his old side project to Buffer, and then he was working on that for quite a few months, and then moved over to San Francisco to look for fundraising, and then... I think it was like 6 months after that, they got in touch asking me if I wanted a freelance for Buffer, but starting to build an iOS app. And then 6 months after that, they asked me to go full-time, which was, I think at that point, everybody at Buffer was focused on moving to San Francisco. There wasn't the idea of a remote team. So, like, aiming like compasses this way to move, and I've sort of stuck with it. So one of the only people on the team to actually still be in the area.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's now very much a distributed team, is it?
Yeah, so Joel and Leah, who have been in San Francisco for maybe the last couple of years, they're currently in New York. They've been in Hawaii this year. I think they've popped over to Boston this week.
Wow, they've been moving around.
Yeah, and I think that's going to continue. I think quite a few people on the team actually travel around quite a lot. Then one of the
so
team
how many
members,
people?
Sorry,
how many people are we talking about?
So yeah, we're about 50 people now. I haven't counted for a few weeks, but it changes quite a lot.
But still, trying to get 50 people to all move to one place in the world is a big effort.
Yeah, back then it was. I think it was 5 of us, so it wasn't. That's crazy to think about.
Not so bad, no.
No. And I guess you need people all over the place from a support point of view.
Yeah, so one of the challenges there was, trying to figure out how we can be, really good at support. And that's one thing that I think Buffer's been really, pushing for, is making sure our support's, really good and as quick as possible. Having everybody in one time zone, which happens when one retreats, does make it a little bit more difficult for catching it when you're, should be asleep.
So you must be used to getting up at strange hours like this, because, you know, there are people all over the world. You must work really weird hours, mustn't you?
Yeah, you'd think, but, like, for iPhone, it's a little bit different, just because if there was a massive issue with the iPhone app, I still couldn't get it fixed straight away because of the App Store and things like that. But, I am. It varies quite a lot. So, like, obviously, catching up with people who are in Europe who are working on the iOS app means I have to make sure there's some overlap there. So, yeah, more recently, because the team's grown in the last couple of weeks, been waking up slightly earlier than normal. So getting into a good routine there.
So just we've kind of jumped right into kind of the culture and life at Buffer and stuff. But just, it's worth me briefly explaining. If you haven't come across Buffer, then I don't know what you've been doing, really. It's essentially a tool that allows you to manage your social media channels. So Twitter, Facebook, all of them, basically, or a lot of them anyway. And what you can do is you can post updates. And it's added to a buffer, a queue of updates that are then pushed out at set intervals throughout the day. So it means that you don't need to constantly, you know, be thinking about when you're sending the updates out. So I use it really heavily because I sit in the evenings and I do a lot of reading and I read articles, and I don't want to just kind of spam my followers with all those in one go. So Buffer nicely spreads them out for me. That's in essence it. Andy, your role is what in the company?
So up until about a month ago, I was the only iOS developer in the company.
Okay.
So, you know, started building out the team there. So, yeah, I'm just building the iPhone and the iPad apps and any other iOS projects that we come up with.
See, now that's quite interesting. So you've finally taken on other people, because it always struck me that was quite a lot for you to do, because you were... It's a very well-developed iOS app. If I compare it to, you know, you seem to have this way of putting out new features and new content on Buffer a lot faster than most people, if it's just you.
Yeah, there's quite a lot there to handle for one person. We have been hiring for quite a while. So I think we've had a big focus on hiring. So we've hired, over 10 people.
Wow.
Which is just crazy growth.
Before that, you didn't have, let alone any holiday, any sleep?
Had holidays every now and again. One thing Buffer introduced was actually giving employees money to actually go away, because there's an open vacation policy. Yeah. But with that, you don't tend to go on holiday.
Yeah, it's funny how that works the other way around, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go on holiday whenever you like. No one goes on holiday.
And then while I was in the UK and I had a set number of days, I used them all up too early.
Right.
See, it's interesting that, because I'm a little bit cynical of that kind of, take as much holiday as you want, because it sounds so open and inclusive. But actually, it's like you're kind of looking at everybody else and going, well, how much have they taken? Oh, they haven't taken much. I bet not take much. But they would actually give you money to make you go on holiday, would they?
There's a set amount, and then there's also some set aside as well for dependents. So got a wife or kids, etc.
That is so... One of the really interesting thing about Buffer, and this is nothing whatsoever to do with what we're supposed to be talking about today, but is the culture. It's got quite a unique culture, even by the kind of Valley standards, isn't it? You seem very, very open about pretty much everything, really.
Yeah, so when I started, there wasn't really a lot that was transparent, but... since then, we've had transparent salaries, we've had transparent fundraising, tried transparent feedback and things like that.
How do you feel about having your salary posted on the internet?
Initially, it was a bit daunting, but I think it was probably a week or two, I think... The explanation about why we were doing it, and I think all the benefits that have come from it, I think just outweigh any negatives that are there. Not that I can really think of any.
What benefit do you think has come out of something like that?
One of the biggest ones, is, which surprised us a lot, was hiring. So we got like a flood of people emailing in. So obviously with the transparent salary formula, they could actually work out roughly what their salary would be.
Right.
I can't remember what the figures were, but we had quite a lot of emails that following week.
See, now it's interesting because I was reading, you've recently put out an update in terms of how much you've got in the bank, how many customers that you've got, that kind of stuff. But I noticed it didn't directly say things like whether you're profitable yet. Or, you know, what your income is, what your revenue is. I mean, I know this isn't you and your job, but where do they draw the line over that kind of stuff?
That's a good question. No idea, right? I have no idea where they will draw the line. I think Joel and Leo are quite happy to be pretty open. So if you ask the question about anything, I'm pretty sure they would respond with some figures. I think we actually do publish quite a lot, so we also include like the balance in the bank account each month.
Yeah,
things like that. So
it's very cool. I find it fascinating, that kind of approach. So
it scares the life out of me.
What? Why?
I think it's because it's a different type of business to an agency business. I'm always concerned about if you start publishing things like. I mean, it might not be internal salaries, but, you know, like what you're charging, rates and all that kind of thing, that it could come back and bite you one day. I think that's all it is.
Mm.
We actually did an interesting post which split up where the money from, like, if you pay for an awesome plan, where that goes, how much of the percentage goes on, like, staff and retreats and things like that.
Ooh, that's interesting. I need to read that one. As somebody that pays for an awesome plan, I like to know whether my money is being spent on booze or the next feature.
They're both poor, I suspect.
Yeah, which is fair enough. I'm kind of happy with that. So, I presume you've been there quite a long time, so it must be a place you enjoy working, one presumes.
Yeah, so coming up to 4 years, or 4 years if you include my freelance time at Buffer. Yeah. So, it's quite a while. But, yeah, it's great fun. Don't really feel like it's a job. It's more of, it feels like it's a hobby, which I guess is a really good thing. So.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, it's quite a lot of pressure in some way. I mean, you know, doing iOS development as you do, you know, and Buffer has got, it's not small, you know, it's becoming quite a prominent tool, and it's a tool that, as someone that uses it regularly, I am very reliant upon. So it's quite a high profile bit of work. And then you have the situation where if you release something and it's not right, you've got to kind of wait for Apple to do its thing. Do you feel the pressure of it, or am I making it a bigger deal than it is?
You definitely feel the pressure. So we've just launched a version 5 of the app, which we started working on in May, just before Apple's conference. Yeah. But those bigger updates, you definitely feel more pressure because you're changing so much of it, and then you put it out, even with 100 or 200 beta testers. You don't catch all the little edge cases.
I've actually found an edge case. I reported it yesterday.
Interesting.
But it's a great example, actually, of just how much of a pain in the ass it must be. Because the particular edge case that I found is that if the app is closed on, this is on iOS 9, I'm running it, and on a new iPhone 6S.
Is this the 3D touch shortcut? Not
yeah, the 3D touch kind of shortcut thing. You know, which brings up a compose button, doesn't fire, you know, straight into the compose. It opens the app. Now, that's a nightmare, isn't it? Because you probably didn't even have a phone to code that with until.
That one's an interesting one because the simulator that we got after that announcement didn't have a way of simulating 3D touch. And I don't think it does at the moment. So, things like that are really tricky. So quite a few people held off on implementing them.
Yeah, because we had a little conversation, didn't we, on Twitter, where I was saying, oh, it's a shame Tweetbot haven't implemented any 3D touch. And you came back and said, well, oh, no, it wasn't you, actually. It was someone else came back to me and said, well, that's because they couldn't emulate it.
Yeah.
And so you kind of don't blame people then. So, but that's what I mean about how you seem to implement things very quickly. You know, and yeah, I'm just.
Yeah, it's a funny story with that. We actually implemented it for our 5.0.1 update. But Apple rejected 5.0, so obviously we then bundled everything that we'd fixed into 5.0. So it wouldn't have shipped on time, but yeah, that's one of the reasons why we got it in there super quick.
Because they rejected you.
Yeah.
I mean, does this happen a lot? What did they reject you over?
So initially, this is the first version where we've got in-app subscriptions. So there were some issues with the app description.
Okay.
Where we needed to detail information about the plans and some terms and conditions and things like you need to cancel before the like last 24 hours of your plan.
Right.
If you don't, it'll roll over. And then there was also a restore purchases button in the actual app that we needed to add in there.
Okay.
And the second rejection was just a bug with the watch app.
Yeah. Do you see that process of going through the Apple approval process? Is that an annoyance to you, or is it actually reassuring that there is somebody doing a final kind of quality control check on it?
It's definitely reassuring. So the watch app was a pretty big one. I had actually seen the crash reports come in from Apple testing it and fixed it before they gave me a call saying, we're going to reject the app. which is the first time they've ever rang me, which was an interesting conversation. But yeah, definitely reassuring. They haven't always caught the issues though. So like we've definitely had cases where the app's got to the App Store and there's been like a massive issue with the screen just being black and it not doing anything. And I'm not sure how that's gone through, but yeah.
It's like any system, it can fail on humans, can't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's kind of push forward and try and get into the discussion of what we're going to be talking about today. The reason that we got Andy on the show is to talk about designing user experiences for smaller screens. But before we get into that, I just quickly want to talk about our sponsor, which is Media Temple. One of the best things I love talking about, it was interesting that Andy was just talking about this with Buffer, that Buffer prides themselves on their support. And that's one of the best things, in my opinion, about working with Media Temple is the quality of support you get. Because, yeah, you can get cheaper hosting elsewhere, but when things go wrong, you want really fast support because, you know, when they go wrong, they go seriously wrong when it comes to hosting. So that support is really important. And not only is it the speed of support, in my experience, you know, how quickly you can get to speak to someone, it's also how experienced those support staff are. You know, do they really know their stuff or not? And that is one of the things that I've absolutely loved from Media Temple, that you actually talk to someone that, you know, they don't treat you like an idiot. You know, when sometimes you have to like ring up your broadband supplier and you know, and you get put through to a call center in India, who are working through a list of predefined questions. Have you restarted your router? You know, and all of that kind of basic stuff. You don't get any of that when you ring Media Temple. You get people that know their stuff and will, you know, and will, you know, treat you as a grown up, which is brilliant. They've got super fast answers for, you know, emails or tweets or anything like that. They respond really quickly. They also offer a live chat facility and 24/7 call support. But they've also got a really nice, you know, kind of one of these incident system update pages that is actually updated regularly, and you know you can actually see what's going on, which is great. And they also have extensive self-help resources and an amazing community and all the rest of it. So definitely check them out from a kind of support point of view. If knowing that you've got that, you know, good support behind you is important, then definitely give Media Temple a look. And you can get a special discount as a BOAG World listener using the promo code BOAG, B-O-A-G, for 25% off of that hosting. And go to boagworld.com/Media Temple and enter the promo code upon sign up. So, we are doing a series on user experience design. And of course, one of the huge areas these days is mobile design. These days, it's been like it for years now. Just that makes it, yeah. Young people today, they like to play with their mobile devices. So, yes. We wanted to talk about it as part of the series. Now, my kind of instant reaction, I have to confess, we're going to talk about small screens. Let's get someone on who knows about responsive design. And then I thought, no, Paul, naughty Paul. You know, that because user experience, I think as somebody from a web background, I am naturally inclined to frame things in terms of the web. And because I know the web, I kind of use the web for everything. And I think of the web as the solution. But actually, obviously, that's not the reality for the majority of users. And native apps are a huge area and an area that we haven't really looked at before. So I thought to myself, what cool apps do I like using? And obviously, Buffer is one of my... I think if I could only install three apps on my iPhone, Buffer would be one. With Evernote and OmniFocus would be the other two, I think. Marcus, if you could only have three apps, which ones would you have?
Oh,
I bet it won't be Buffer.
No, I have to confess I don't use Buffer. I don't really tweet that much.
No, you don't. And you even Facebook, you only occasionally. Well, you do use Facebook more, but not for...
Oh, yeah, anything. Yeah, but that's just the kind of personal stuff. I use Evernote, but I never use it on my phone. So, what do I use a lot?
That's, too long. Can't be bothered. Right.
It's really dull things, enough. Like kind of news and weather. News. And
BBC News app.
That and the BBC Sport app, really? WhatsApp.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, dull stuff.
Yeah. I bet, Andy, you have good apps. What's your favourite app from a kind of design point of view or usefulness point of view or whatever?
I'd probably have to say Tweetbot.
Yeah.
Especially the latest, Tweetbot 4.
It's nice. Yeah. Have you seen all this controversy? I've been in arguments today. Oh, yeah, well, paid updates and all this business. What's your thoughts on that?
I know they've worked on it quite a lot. I've been part of the beta for a good couple of months, so I know there's a lot of changes there. So I'm happy to pay the extra each time there's a new version. Especially now it's universal. It means that you don't have to buy it twice on two different devices.
And it's just, oh, yeah. It just got up my nose, that whole conversation. It's like, and it's like, it's not an expensive app.
I mean, it's just a coffee, basically.
I know. Anyway, that's not what we're supposed to be talking about. Right, let's do some of the actual questions. Right, so, bearing in mind my web bias, my first question is, why at Buffer did you decide you needed native apps as well? Because obviously it started as a web-based app. Why did that decision get made to start looking at native apps?
That's an interesting one. That's why I was hired to build the iOS app. So that decision was already done.
But, predated you.
Yeah. But I think from just like my thoughts on it and why Buffer probably decided to go there in that route was we didn't actually have an API at that point. So it was also like a two birds, one stone situation of building native apps just for like the speed and the experience there while also building out the API at the same time. So any endpoints that we needed on the apps as we were building them, it built out the API as well. Which the API has been quite a big thing for us for getting included in other apps and getting the name out of there. So obviously if you see a Buffer icon in another Twitter app, then you're going to click on it, find out what it is, and it brings people in that way.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's really interesting that you kind of, the developing the API at the same time and kind of tying those two projects together.
Yeah, it was an interesting project. So actually building out the app without an API initially, like the UI side of things, and then obviously implementing it as we were going along.
So do you do both the UI, well, you must do the UI and the coding then?
So back then, yes. So that's why the first version of the app, to change profiles, you had to swipe left to right in a scroll view. And if you had like 20 accounts, you had to keep swiping. It was terrible. There's screenshots on Google, but yeah, it's for, like, at this point, it's pretty rare that I do any of the design. Like, I might lay something out and go with that, but more recently we've had designers actually come in and yeah.
So are they in-house designers or do you use external people?
In-house, yeah.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's good. That's interesting. So, I mean, for me, I think the reason Buffer makes such a good native app is because it's the kind of thing that you use a lot, if that makes sense, you know, and also because it needs to be, you know, especially when things like extensions came along and, you know, I could be reading something on Mobile Safari and easily send that link across to Buffer for sharing. It's that kind of deep integration combined with the fact that you need to use it a lot that I think really makes it sensible, in my opinion. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, definitely with the extensions, like, that's helped a lot. And prior to that, we actually had the Safari bookmarklet, which I actually discovered yesterday about 40 people a day still use.
Whoa!
So, yeah, we actually still support that, which is quite interesting, and it's still actually getting some usage.
Yeah, no, that's kind of good. I think whether that's because people haven't upgraded or just it's become a habit.
So the tracking we added actually from iOS 8 onwards, so it would be around, it's just, I think installing the bookmarklet and the extension, they take about the same amount of time.
Yeah.
The processes aren't as easy as they could be, so we're trying to figure out better ways to actually teach users how to actually get that installed and share from Safari and other apps quickly.
There is, yeah, Apple don't make it particularly easy with these kinds of things. The number of apps that are having to explain, you need to go into settings. Keyboards are another great example, aren't they? Go into settings, go into keyboard, allow full access, all this kind of hoops you have to jump through to do stuff. You know, it's a shame. I can understand why they don't automate it, because otherwise, app developers would be, you know, setting these things up, you know, and it would just irritate people. But on the other hand, you feel like it should be a bit easier.
Yeah, there's the same sort of flow for content blockers as well.
Yeah, that's the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And content blockers, yes, that's a whole nother subject. Right, sorry, my computer keeps putting the screensaver on, and so I lose my questions. That's really annoying. There we go, we're back. Okay, so do you think from your perspective that native provides a better user experience than web-based stuff? Have you always been, you know, have you got a web background? I don't know what your background is.
Yeah, so prior to Buffer, I was building WordPress sites. for most of the time. So
okay.
And then, yeah, HTML, CSS was kind of my background before jumping over to iOS side of.
So what's your kind of feeling over this, you know, this kind of debate about native, not native, you know, which is better, all of that kind of thing?
I think when anybody usually asks me whether they should build something, maybe PhoneGap or things like that, I always lean to native, and always have done.
Why is that?
Back then, I probably didn't have good reasons for it, but I think now is just not having to emulate what the native OS does. Yeah. Things like animations never feel quite right. Loading never feels quite right. So,
Sorry, I was going to say, I think it comes back to what we were saying, or what Paul was saying on the last question about whether something's going to be used a lot. We have been approached, not so much now, but three, four, five years ago, by many organisations that said, you know, can you build us an app? And it was often for one-off use, so it was actually more difficult. It would make the user experience more difficult for the user to have to download an app rather than have a responsive website, for example.
Hmm.
So I think that's the big thing for me, is whether if an app is going to be used a lot, then chances are it's certainly going to be easier to use as a native app. But if you're only going to do it once, that experience, then chances are it probably isn't worth doing.
Yeah, there's the other side of that as well, where Apple push you to not just simply make a native version of your website. That's not what they want. They want an app that actually does has features. So I think back in the early days, the first couple of apps I did were basically native versions of websites, and sometimes they would just get rejected because there was no features there.
Mm.
You'd have to add in like maps and things like that that wouldn't necessarily be possible on the web app side.
I think, you know, I think it's a no-brainer, isn't it, where you're talking about something that's very task-heavy, that I always think native tends to work better. But the ones I kind of question are things like the BBC News app, you know, what the advantages are over a responsive site in that kind of scenario. Marcus, why do you have the native app installed rather than using the website?
I actually use the website.
Oh, there you go.
Even though I've got the app installed, I just don't think it's designed quite how I'd like it to be.
Right.
And that's the only reason I can put it. Yeah, that's the only reason I've got is I'm so used to using the website that if I was going to use the app, I'd want it to be like the website, which is anti Apple policy.
Yeah,
which is what Andy just said. But I just find it a bit clunky. But that's because I don't use it very much, I guess. So, yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Mm. Yeah, so I actually have the BBC News app, and I think the only reason I have that is for the push notifications, which I get every now and again, which you wouldn't be able to get with a web app. So
that's true.
You could do push notifications with a web app, Mike, can't you? Because I get updates from Smashing Magazine via push notifications. Yeah.
I'll tell you something.
It's certainly not as annoying as the BBC News ones that do me jump every time I get a notification from the BBC News site, because it's this kind of very, you know, authoritative kind of BBC jingle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's when you're in bed and you have it at like 6 o'clock in the morning and then you sort of like reminisce about the UK because you haven't heard that little chime for 6 months.
Aww. Do you miss home?
Maybe a
obviously
little
not because you've chosen to stay. Yeah. Right, next question. So what do you know, what things do you need to really consider when designing these kinds of mobile apps? Because obviously it's a different process. It's a different use case. So I'm kind of interested in the kind of things that you think you need to consider for it.
Yeah. So when especially when we're building new features for Buffer, we find that you just can't shrink down a feature and be like, right, that's it. It's going to work on mobile. Like zooming out of your browser just wouldn't work. So you have to take out features. So I think a good thing that we're working on right now is insights in the iOS app. Mm-hmm. So obviously lots of graphs, but we can't add all of the features that we have on web to the app itself. Mm-hmm. So we take out little things that might not make sense or make the experience a bit too complicated. Mm. Another thing we do quite a lot is prototyping.
Mm-hmm.
So for version 5, we actually went away and we had like a really early version of what we had designed up. I think probably the biggest one we prototyped was reordering. Reordering in our app is pretty confusing because it's set to the schedule that you have on your Buffer account. So there's like, you'd have 4 slots in the like today slot, 5 in tomorrow, and then if you reorder, you have to then work out where all the updates shuffle to. And it's never been the greatest experience, and it's one that we still need to work on quite a lot. But we prototyped this feature where you'd pick up an update and then you could just simply scroll without having to long press. And it would have like a gap at the back until you pressed done. It worked quite well. It was fast. It just didn't feel quite right. So we never actually like carried on. But yeah, just prototyping those different things and seeing how they feel on a real device.
When you say you prototype them, you make them working on a device itself, so you can actually play with it.
Yeah, so you don't go too far with it. So I think we just used all native UI. We didn't style anything up.
Yeah.
But yeah, having it actually on the device helped. If it was in the simulator, then you wouldn't get a feel for like where your thumb is on the screen, whether you're hiding things that are necessary to see.
And that's such an important part, I think, of mobile design. It is the tactile experience of it. You know, the animation, the way things respond when you press them. And I guess with things like 3D touch, that's just becoming a bigger and bigger deal as well, of those kind of nuances that really can only be done on the physical device.
Yeah, there's so many different like ways to input into the device. So obviously you've got like the gyroscope, accelerometer. So we actually have a shake to shuffle feature in the app.
Which is brilliant, by the way. I use it all the time.
We should actually teach people that it's there instead of them accidentally triggering it and then discovering it. But there's things like that that you can think about. And yeah, especially now with 3D touch, it's got ways of previewing content quickly before, instead of having to go into it and then close out of it again. I think that's just going to speed things up for people who are using apps.
But it's quite interesting, isn't it, 3D touch, because it's, you know, you really... It's interesting looking at iOS development at the moment that you're almost beginning to be faced with some of the challenges and principles of web design. So, for example, now the iPad does split screen. You're really having to think responsively in terms of the interfaces you create. And then with something like 3D touch, that's not all available on all iOS devices. So then you're talking about progressive enhancement kind of features. So I'm finding that quite interesting to see the progression there.
Yeah. If you look back at the past, keynotes at Apple's WWDC, they like to drill into you that you should be using auto layout to lay out your views and things like that. I think they've been doing that for quite a while to try and get you ready for this.
Yeah.
So for us to do multitasking for version 5 was, I think it took me about 20 minutes to get it working for the initial version, just because we use auto layout. So I think there was just a few UI elements that didn't quite resize correctly, so we had to just adjust those. But, it was fairly easy for us. You definitely have to think about that sort of stuff, and it is definitely moving to where web is or was with different, especially now with inputs. So, like, 3D touch, you have to start thinking about that. On top of like whether you should use that to do reordering or long press, and these different types of gestures.
Yeah, and then what you do when 3D touch isn't there? You know, you've got to fall back on another approach, and you also can get into bizarre situations, which I've done a couple of times with 3D touch, where it's got confused about whether I'm doing a long touch or a 3D touch because I'm not quite used to it yet. And so that kind of makes things go wrong. And
I've been doing exactly the same this past week, looking at what we can do with the peak and pop for links and updates.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was triggering long press because I'm not just like force touching or 3D touching, I should say. It's definitely tricky, and I think over the next couple of months you'll see different implementations of what 3D touch is, and then I'm not sure whether there's going to be like a norm of.
I'm looking forward to getting my 6S soon, but I'm slightly with trepidation because being a lefty, currently still on the 5S,
I can just about stretch my thumb across the screen to buttons that have been put in place for right-handed people, but I'm wondering whether I'm going to be able to do that on the larger phone. Things like that.
Well, but, because I damaged a tendon in my thumb, I can't do thumb reachy things like that and have to peck at it anyway, so I'm fine.
I don't care.
I don't care about your problems. I mean, that is an example of a common design mistake that you see people make with apps is in the placement of buttons and items that, you know, that you then cover up, or if you're left-handed, you can't quite reach. But I'm curious as to what other kind of common things that you've seen, Andy, in terms of cock-ups that people have made in designing mobile apps.
So had the chance to actually meet a couple of Apple designers at WWDC.
Cool.
Obviously they're quite keen on people using native controls for everything. I think nowadays it's not so bad, but in the past, the people going out of the way and making their own crazy UI for doing different tasks, I think it's definitely better now. We've been guilty of it in the past and sort of swung the other way now, where we're trying to use as much native stuff as possible, as in Apple-provided stuff, and then only customizing it if we like need to tweak the branding and stuff of those elements. Another big thing is probably minimizing the number of taps. So in version 4 of our app, adding an image, you had to tap add an image. Then on that view, you had like use last photo, select a photo from camera roll, all these options. In the latest version, it's just on the compose view, on the root view, and it will just bring up the image selector. And yeah, we've moved quite a few of the elements down from the top to the bottom to make it easier for your thumb.
I tell you, the thing about more clicks than necessary does drive me around the twist. It's like OmniFocus. You can get really buried down deep down in an individual project, and to get back to the home screen, you have to kind of keep clicking. Recently, I discovered if you click and hold on that icon, or press and hold, it takes you back. But I hadn't, you know, for ages, I didn't realize that. And so it just drove me around the twist.
Yeah, just little shortcuts like that. So we've added, if you tap on the tab bar at the bottom, if you're on that view already, it will scroll to the top. So you don't have to, like, stretch to tap the status bar.
I'll tell you one thing with your app, which... talking about extra taps that I'm interested in, is you've now got a situation where if I create a message to send, if there's a link associated with it, I have a second screen saying whether I want to say anything about it on Facebook.
Yep.
I want to get rid of that. Let me turn that off.
I wish we could. So it was actually a Facebook compliance or policy thing. So we actually had to add that in. So there's a blog post on our, I think it's on our open blog, on why we had to add that in. But we had to add it on web. So Facebook actually disabled the app for a short period of time. So none of the posts were actually going out to Facebook. But we managed to like rectify it pretty quickly. But I can totally understand why they're doing it. So it's just so apps don't pre-fill content and like make you say something that you don't want to say.
I guess I find that acceptable.
So we're trying to make it easier for you, so you can actually like copy the title from the link attachment that's on the screen and paste it in. But we can't do anything to say, like, we can't have a button that says copy and paste title.
Right. So
That was definitely a tricky one to try and get the experience like as good as possible. Like obviously it's not a restriction on our side, it's just that Facebook don't want us doing it, so we had to figure out a good solution there. And obviously people who've been using the app for quite a few years, it's a new step, and then we have to obviously deal with all the tweets and things like that that come in saying, why is this an extra step? Can I turn it off?
Just like I have, basically. Yeah. Oh, well, I like to be predictable. Do you think designing for the web and native apps have become now a kind of radically different skill set? So, for example, does it annoy you when a web designer talks about, you know, we design, you know, native apps too, you know, in the same way as print designers always do go, oh yeah, we build websites too. You know, have they become too different and should be considered different disciplines, do you think?
Don't think so. So every designer that I've worked with at Buffer has easily switched between web and native.
Okay.
So it might be that I'm just really fortunate there, but I don't think it's too radically different. I think if they, a designer being a designer using their phone, they're going to like pick up on the common like UI for different elements. Mm. And yeah, doing that, they probably get a good idea of like how things should be laid out, mm. what elements to use for different things. I think you just need a slightly different thought process on like the screen real estate. And then maybe digging into like human interface guidelines that Apple and Google provide.
Yeah, which are really good. You know, they're very thorough guidelines and very useful from what I've seen of them. So at Buffer, do you have a separate team or individual that's working on Android and other platforms, one presumes?
Yes, we have an Android team. Moment, it's just one guy. So iOS.
Well, that's a team. A team of one.
Yeah, we've been found it really easy to hire iOS developers, but not so easy for Android. But yeah, so we have iOS and Android. We don't actually have a team for things like Windows Phone or anything like that right now.
So what, do you outsource that at the moment?
No, we just don't have a Windows Phone app.
Oh, I thought you did.
It might be one that we explore. I know Microsoft announced some Objective-C stuff where we could possibly like port over our iOS app.
So is it, you know, all the changes that have been happening, because the impression that I get is Apple have done quite a lot in the more recent iOS updates in terms of, you know, APIs and back-end functionality. And is it Swift as well, the new language that's available to you? Is that all of those, do you feel like the tools are maturing for you?
Definitely. We don't actually use any Swift in the app at the moment. It's one that I'm like chatting to a few developers in San Francisco about how the switch has gone for them. So because you can actually like introduce it bit by bit, so like new segments of the app you could actually implement in Swift, and and then recode anything that's new. Obviously, being like 4 years worth of code, there's quite a lot there. I don't think we'd do like a whole rewrite for one version. I definitely think it's probably easier for iOS developers to get into it now.
Yeah.
People wanting to be iOS developers.
Well, it is what the cool kids do, isn't it? Mobile, you know, being working on the web, that's so, you know, 1994, isn't it?
Yeah, for me, it was probably 2009.
So what about the future then? Where do you think things are going to go from the kind of native app standpoint in terms of user experience on mobile devices and functionality and interfaces and that kind of stuff? There's an easy question.
Yeah, I'd quite like to see, probably a little bit of a biased view, but I'd like to see the extension side of things improved a little. Just that experience that we're not responsible for, so installing the extension, making that super easy. But yeah, obviously that's a little bit biased to iOS. And then things like 3D touch and new technologies that Apple keep coming out with, like how they tweak the behavior of users, like how they expect things to be like shown when they 3D touch on the screen.
Mm.
I think with 3D touch as well. It's going to improve things speed wise. So many different aspects, like previewing a link, like previewing an image. You don't have to open it fully, go back again.
I have to say, when I first saw them demonstrate 3D touch, I thought this feels like a bit of a gimmick to sell the 6S. But once you actually get it in your hands and you actually start using it, it's actually quite a profound change, isn't it, in how how the user interaction happens.
Yeah.
I
haven't used it that much.
Yeah, whatever. It's there.
Oh, well. I haven't used it at all yet, so I can't comment.
It's very nice. It's nice very and nice. Shiny. Paul I'm likes new shiny that. Things, which is why I love being on Andy's beta testing list, because it means I get to play. It's like every time, there's a new test flight update for Buffer. Let's have a little play with that, see what he's done now. You keep me entertained, Andy.
Yeah, I've got plenty of things in the work.
And you're so... I'm just gobsmacked at how quickly they come out. I can't keep up sometimes. You release things into the Buffer... to the beta list incredibly quickly. It's like multiple times a day sometimes.
Yeah, my GitHub history for version 5 towards the end was a little bit crazy. I think I had like a 33-day streak. where I was like launched, like just submitting builds over the weekend, and obviously now with a team of three, we can be even quicker. But with test flight for external, we're only limited to two a day.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a bit of a buffer for you.
A buffer from Buffer.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No pun intended.
Yes, indeed. Right, let's quickly talk about our other sponsor for this week. Today's sponsor is from Fleep. Now, you may or may not have heard of Fleep. How do I describe it to you? It's something I've been involved with for a little length of time. So Fleep is kind of the next generation of messengers. So if you think about something like Slack that has become... so universally loved amongst the kind of design and developer community, Fleep feels to me like the kind of next step on from that a little bit. It's got very tight email integration. So essentially where Slack kind of needs you to participate in its little Slack world, Fleep doesn't presume that, which makes it a really good tool for communicating with your clients over, because they don't need to sign up for Fleep. They don't even need to know that you're using it. But when they send you emails, it can go into Fleep and it can become part of the conversation that you're having in Fleep. So it's a really good way of kind of, managing your projects and managing your communications and getting out of the email client if you so wish, which I know many of us are sick of email and dealing with that. The other thing is it's got things like audio video calling built into it and screen sharing. So all of that's kind of on hand. So it's this nice kind of communication hub, which is great. It's also, it's got a nice kind of pin board functionality. So, when, on Slack and somebody says something on Slack and then it gets lost in the stream and you have to search for it, and it happens on email, doesn't it? Well, in Fleep, you can kind of pin those particular messages to the side so that they're always available. You can also turn messages into tasks as well, which is a really nice little feature. The bit that I like the most, and I'm trying to think how this works on Slack. I don't think Slack has got the equivalent of it. I'm just opening Slack now to see. I want to know. But essentially, it will notify you when someone has actually seen... No, see, Slack doesn't do this. It will notify you when someone has read your particular message. So you know whether people are have seen what you're doing and are just choosing to ignore you. Which
it only does that if you include their name, doesn't it, Slack?
Ah, it does it with the name. Yeah. Right. Well, this does it kind of universally, which is really quite useful. They, like Slack, they've got loads of integration and all the other kind of cool stuff that you'd expect from this kind of platform. You can find out more about Fleep and give it a test drive absolutely free at boagworld.com/Fleep. So that's F-L-E-E-P. So there you go. That is Fleep. And Marcus, do you have a joke for us?
I do, and I think I think this is one from Lee. So you kind of you can guess the quality of it.
Mm.
Why do Marxists drink green tea?
Go on. Why do Marxists drink green tea?
Because all property is theft.
That is awful.
I thought it was quite clever, actually. But there you go.
Well, it is clever. You know, it's a clever pun on words, but it's not funny. A joke is supposed to be funny.
Well, all right. It appeals to my sense of humour.
Anyway, Andy, I'm sorry you had to put up with that. It just goes with the territory, I'm afraid. So, Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope it wasn't too painful, and thank you for giving us a bit of a glimpse into the world of mobile app design.
It's great to be here.
Cool.
Okay, thanks very much, Andy.
Next week, we're going to be looking at running a UX workshop with James Box. You'll be pleased to hear, Marcus, because I know you like James.
I do, and it's also something that I can probably add a bit more to than this week's conversation. Which is always
well,
nice.
Even I was, yeah, I'm at the edge of my knowledge when it comes to native apps. It's a good job we had Andy here, who did a sterling job answering questions with us going, I don't know. So, James is on next week. He's the co-author of a brilliant book that I've raved about a lot called Undercover UX. So between now and next week, your homework is to go and buy Undercover UX and read it. It'll be worth it, trust me. And come back and join us next week. Where we talk about running a UX workshop. But until then, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.